morning, Your Honors.
Good morning.
I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please.
You may.
The Bartons filed this lawsuit pro se and wrote the complaint themselves. I just wanted to state that from the beginning. When the defendant's motion to dismiss was heard, we requested leave to amend the complaint. But the motion to amend was erroneously denied. We attached the proposed amended complaint to our motion. That amended complaint brought in new facts that the Bartons had not raised in their original complaint, but they were new facts, not new claims. So the facts we brought in were facts that came under the Deed of Trust Act and the Consumer Protection Act. Part of those facts were that the defendants failed to abide by the Deed of Trust Act by failing to send the required notices to the Bartons. Those facts should have been allowed, which I'll describe herein. But I want to start with equitable estoppel. We're arguing that equitable estoppel does not apply here. The Schroeder case addresses this. Completely new facts were raised in the current lawsuit that didn't exist in any previous or prior lawsuits. This particular case involved a post-foreclosure claims. The foreclosure had not even taken place when the previous lawsuits were filed by my clients, which were also pro se the previous year. There was no foreclosure during the previous suits. This isn't very complicated. Now we fast forward to 2014, when my clients filed the present case, a foreclosure had taken place prior to their filing this lawsuit. So we're not in a situation where we're trying to stop a trustee's sale. There's already been one. That obviously hadn't happened in the previous cases. The trustee's sale took place in April of 2014. A new notice of default should have been sent prior to that sale, and it should have been preceded by what's called a notice of pre-foreclosure options, which is required under RCW 6124031 sub 1. The defendants also failed to engage in mediation. Now, the notice of pre-foreclosure options is a very detailed document that specifies and informs the homeowner that they have the right to mediate. There's various different ways they can avoid the foreclosure from going forward. If they want to come to the table with the lender, they might be able to get a loan modification. All of that information should be provided in the notice of pre-foreclosure options. So this is a critical document. This can't just be, you know, oh, it's just some letter that we didn't send out. No, this is required by statute, and the statute requires that it be sent prior to the notice of default. So the statute, the Deed of Trust Act, was amended at the end of 2011. The new amendments went into effect in June of 2012. The only notice of default issued by Quality Loan Services was issued on July 5th of 2012, so a month after the new provisions went into effect. But the Deed of Trust Act amendments that went into effect on June 7th added the requirement of sending a notice of pre-foreclosure options. So the correct action that should have been taken by the defendants would be to issue the notice of pre-foreclosure options and then send out a new notice of default after that if the Bartons chose not to mediate or they didn't contact the lender within the 30-day period, which is also a requirement in that notice.
What is the effect of the case that we have where we have held that it isn't necessary to send out more than one notice of default?
Well, that was
the Leahy case.
So that was the issue here is that the law changed during the time period that we're talking about. So in cases where...
Okay, so let's just go over that time period again. The notice of default was sent out on what date?
The notice of default was issued on July 5th, 2012. Now, those aren't required to be recorded, but that was the date it was signed by the trustee.
And you're saying the date, the effective date of the law change was when?
Was June 7th, 2012.
Okay, so you're saying that the that there was a new requirement in effect as of of June 7th, 2012, that they didn't comply with.
Correct.
And that was not in effect prior to that date, that same requirement?
The amendments were passed at the end of 2011, but the legislature said they will be effective in June of 2012. So June of 2012 is the date, the key date. But they should have, so they could have sent out that notice before the notice of default. But if they didn't, if some reason they weren't aware of the new changes in the law, which I doubt, but if there's some benefit of the doubt there, they should have at least
okay, so the key to your argument then is that there was a change in the law that they failed to notice and they didn't notify, give your client a notification.
Correct. Now, my clients could have, and they specifically stated, we desperately would have wanted to mediate this. Absolutely. And by not receiving that notice, they had no idea that was even a choice for them. They don't know about the amendments to the law. So meanwhile, they receive a notice of default and then subsequently the notice of trustee's sale, which was issued on in December of 2013. So the notice should have been sent first, then a new notice of default, or at least some explanation. I'm alleging they should have sent a new notice of default because as a matter of fact, if time has passed, didn't get to.
You have 3 minutes.
Okay, for rebuttal. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Fred Burnside here representing J.P. Morgan Chase.
Okay, are you sharing time with?
We are. I was going to say that next. I'm going to use 4 minutes, and they're going to split up the rest.
Okay.
I'm here representing Chase for the third time against these plaintiffs. I litigated the cases in front of Judge Kuhnhauer and Judge Lasnik before.
We're aware of those cases, but perhaps you could go right to the heart of the matter here, which is the argument you just heard, which is that there was a change in the law that required a notice that would have advised them of their right to mediation.
Sure. You know, if you look at the verbatim report of the proceedings at page 17, plaintiffs concede they didn't plead that in their complaint at all.
How about in their amended complaint?
They sought leave to amend, but they haven't appealed the denial of leave to amend. Their statement of issues doesn't mention denial of leave to amend. They didn't appeal that order at all, so it's not properly before the court. But regardless, on the merits, those obligations existed at the time they filed the lawsuit that Judge Lasnik dismissed with prejudice. So they are barred by res judicata because they are claims that could have been raised at that time. So as to that, and I think the Leahy case that Your Honor cites is spot on, because I think in that case it said, sure, going forward, if no notice of default has been issued ever, then you may have to issue a notice of pre-foreclosure options before that. But if one has issued, you don't need to send that letter. But regardless, you know, they didn't plead it. We didn't have a chance to brief it or argue it below. They haven't appealed that denial. It appears nowhere in the complaint. And res judicata would bar it. Because ultimately what they argued in the prior two cases is, Chase, we don't think you have a right to foreclose. We don't think that you're the note holder, and we don't think you're the beneficiary. And Judge Lasnik conclusively rejected that. They didn't appeal that judgment. That judgment means they are bound by that. This is nothing but an attempt, a collateral attack on that judgment by arguing, well, now there's a sale.
Well, I understand what you're saying, and I understand that you have the res judicata argument. I guess what I'm trying to figure out is, if you didn't, I would like to understand the merits, whether you actually do disagree on the merits. I mean, in other words, counsel is representing that, okay, there was a law change, okay, that was important, that could have been important had it not been barred, had the argument, in your view, not been barred by res judicata. So could you pick it up at that time? Was there a change in the law that created a new obligation for you as of effective date June 7th, 2012?
I think there was a change in the law that said that if there has been no notice of default issued yet, before you can issue one, you need to send a notice of pre-foreclosure options. And there had already been a notice of default issued in this case.
Had there been any notice of pre-foreclosure options?
There wasn't a requirement before that.
At that time.
At that time. And more
so you were aware, at least constructively, Chase was, of the new law.
Presumptively, yeah. I mean, I don't know that, you know, for certain.
Right, but you could have sent out a letter or some kind of a new notice and said, by the way, now there are pre-foreclosure options.
Right. But
you did not.
I wouldn't concede that, no. I mean, plaintiff's counsel talked about testimony from the plaintiffs that appears nowhere in the record about what they would have done, but we are not conceding that a notice didn't go out. They're simply alleging in their subject to Rule 11 in an effort to file an amended complaint that they didn't get it. But that's the whole point, is that they could have litigated this before. They didn't. They admit it's not in the complaint in this case, and they didn't appeal the denial of the leave to amend, which is an abuse of discretion standard. So that issue, look at page 5 of their brief. It lists the issues and assignments of error. The denial of leave to amend to add these claims appears nowhere in those issues. A leave to amend doesn't appear anywhere in the merits on the briefing. They didn't have, this issue isn't before this court, and we think it's bound by res judicata, and we don't think the law applies in any event because it had already been issued a notice of default. This case, I think, is relatively simple and can be affirmed on the res judicata argument, and that it fails in the merits. And most importantly, the new issues they're trying to raise now are issues they have not appealed. So as a result of that, we would ask the court to affirm the dismissal. I'll reserve the rest of the time, please.
Thank you. May it please the court, Joe McIntosh for the trustee, Quality Loan. The court has asked whether...
How many of the 6 minutes do you want?
Two, Your Honor.
All right, thank you.
The court has asked whether the notice of default complied with the 2011 amendments to the foreclosure, or the Foreclosure Fairness Act amendments to the Deed of Trust Act. As Mr. Burnside mentioned, it wasn't brief, but it hasn't been addressed in our briefing, but I'm looking at the notice of default, which is in the court's record, and it begins on clerk papers 644, and it goes through 655, and the last paper in that is the foreclosure loss mitigation form, and that's part of the Foreclosure Fairness Act amendment. So this was a post-amendment notice of default. Now, if you look at that loss mitigation form, what it is it's a form the beneficiary fills out to certify to the trustee that they have completed the pre-foreclosure contact requirements. So this form is signed by Chase, and they're certifying to Quality that they have completed those requirements. So,
but I thought that the options were to be done before a notice, and Chase said they sent one notice.
Well...
So aren't they out of sequence?
No, because
on those facts.
Because Chase tells the trustee, I don't know what Chase did specifically. Trustee's obligation is to acquire this foreclosure loss mitigation form saying we've complied with the pre-foreclosure options, and then you can proceed with the notice of default. That notice of default cannot issue before those were complied with. So as far as the trustee is concerned, these requirements were complied with, and the trustee was permitted to issue that notice of default. And then as the Leahy case tells us, this notice of default, which was issued in 2012, did not need to be reissued with the new notice of sales. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hey, please, the court. David Lawyer here on behalf of Triangle Properties, the record title owner of the real property in this case. My client, of course, came along after all of the foreclosure or the pre-foreclosure sale processes had taken place. And so I want to focus my remarks to the extent that they're useful to you on this issue of waiver. And we are aware, of course, of the appellant's reliance, heavy reliance, I should say, on the Albus versus Premier case, saying that it's not automatic that rights are waived any time a party under foreclosure fails to enjoin the sale or attempt to enjoin the sale before it occurs. We think that that case had some very unique facts that are not at all similar to this case, where in that particular case, the borrower who was in default was in close communication under a forbearance agreement with the foreclosing lender and was making payments, and the lender at least tacitly, if not expressly, had agreed, don't worry, as long as you make these payments, we won't go ahead with the sale. And then, unfortunately, the trustee went ahead and conducted the sale, and then the lender decided to change its mind and not accept the last of those payments, and then that particular foreclosed owner proceeded with their claims. The party that purchased at the sale was aware of all of those circumstances and then lost or did not ever acquire bona fide purchaser status. In this case, we had a borrower who was admittedly in default, made two attempts through prior lawsuits to stop a foreclosure by making their arguments before the sale took place, and then for reasons known only to the Bartons, did not choose to do that on the third go-round, and at that time, my client shows up, is the successful bidder, pays the money in cash. It's been slightly more than 2 years ago now. When they started their lawsuit in May of 2014, the Bartons didn't join my client, Triangle, which was the successful bidder at the sale. And so it was only when Triangle tried to finance some remodeling construction expense that they found out that by reason of the way the claim was pleaded, there was a cloud on the title. And so that gets us to the question of waiver. Under RCW 6124-127, the statutory language says that certain kinds of claims are not waived in actions for damages. And our problem, Triangle's problem, is that this case is oftentimes described by the Bartons themselves as a claim for damages, yet in their pro se effort to plead their complaint, they somehow made enough references to wanting to void the sale that it winds up showing up as a cloud on title. In their second sentence of their opening brief, they describe their claim as a lawsuit for damages. In the second paragraph of their summary of argument, they talk about how the appellants are entitled to damages, and they do the same thing in the third paragraph of their summary of their argument. They want damages. We don't really think that their arguments are very strong on the procedural questions. We think that counsel for QLS and for Chase have eloquently briefed all the reasons that they've had their shot. These arguments shouldn't fly. But to the extent that the court is persuaded that there was anything materially wrong with the pre-foreclosure process, we do think that that should not have the impact of allowing the Bartons, who never tried to enjoin the sale, who didn't even name Triangle as a party to the existing lawsuit, to interfere and to jeopardize with the title that Triangle acquired 2 years ago by paying cash for the property at what appeared to them to be an otherwise ordinary nonjudicial foreclosure sale. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you.
And I want to address waiver and the Baban case also is instructive on this question, which is a Court of Appeals case.
Are you trying to undo the sale?
We believe it should be voided, yes.
You do?
Yeah. The waiver, in a post-sale challenge, the Supreme Court found that waiver does not apply to all types of circumstances, and that is the Albus case. Waiver is not strictly applied because of the use of the term may in the statute. And it's well settled that the trustee in a foreclosure must strictly comply with the statutory requirements and the black letter of the law. The language in the trustee's deed is just simply false, and that's on the trustee. The language in the trustee's deed is the document that's issued after the sale to basically transfer the interest in the property from the trustee to the new buyer. In that trustee's deed, they have to make certain recitations. They say that the current trustee transmitted the notice of default to the required parties. Said notice was posted or served in accordance with the law. And as I argued before, that's factually incorrect because no notice Notices weren't provided. Notice of pre-foreclosure options was not provided in accordance with the statute.
Could I ask you, since time is short, to address the argument that Chase makes that you are barred from bringing this up since you have not assigned error to the denial of the motion to amend?
We did. Well, waiver applies to the original complaint as well. So we're arguing.
Okay,
we
but
did
my
raise
question
waivers.
Is having to do with the motion to amend. So you are not. You did not assign error to the order denying leave to amend. Is that right?
That's not in our assignments of error.
All right.
That's
so you are not pursuing that assignment of error?
Well, not at this point, no. No, we are not.
Okay.
Yeah. But the waiver applies to the original facts in the complaint as well.
Okay. And so perhaps it would be good to address the res judicata argument then. Why is this argument about the we didn't get notice of pre-foreclosure options not something that could have been brought up with Judge Lasnik?
Because there had been no foreclosure yet. So that was impossible. You can't allege something that happens in the future. I mean, that's ridiculous. So res judicata means you could have brought this claim and you didn't. And so we're dismissing with prejudice. You can't bring it again in the future. Now, my clients, I don't know if they knew what that meant at the time they wrote their complaint or not, but the point is that the new facts, the new foreclosure, the new notices of default, et cetera, hadn't happened yet. At least the foreclosure hadn't happened yet. So that's our argument on that.
Thank you.
Thank you.